How you been?
Fine. How you been?
Okay. Have I seen you in the last 3 years?
Well, the last time we chatted, you had Suzanne in, and
so that
we
was
did How to Avoid
ago.
Love and Marriage.
That was 3 years ago.
And I didn't know at the time that other things were going through your mind,
yes.
As well as avoiding love and marriage.
Yes. Not avoiding babies.
No. So tell me what, other than making babies, we'll get to that in a moment, but other than making...
Okay, are we rolling
babies,
it?
Yeah, we're rolling. Tell me what you've been doing.
What have I been doing? Well, I started on my next book, which is a horror story. And
is that about love and marriage, too?
Well, it's not far from the topic. It's about an evil nanny and who takes over a family.
This is not based on the character of Karen.
Right, no, it's not. However,
she will sue you.
However, that's where the idea came from. Our first nanny was a very wonderful nanny with the baby, and with us, she was intermittently wonderful and intermittently not wonderful. And it did suggest itself to me, what if we had hired an evil nanny? So the next book will be a combination, perhaps, of The Servant and Rosemary's Baby. However, Confessions of a Pregnant Father is not a horror story. It is a truthful, almost painfully candid at times, serious, and I hope humorous, often, account of how I decided at age 48, after a lifetime of not really being comfortable with children, to have a child, and of the tragic comic experiences that we had during the pregnancy, during the delivery of the child, and for the first few months of my son's life. And when I say tragic comic, I think of such things as colic, which is a condition where the baby cries nonstop for 2 to 10 hours at a time, and where you seriously question whether you should be a parent, whether you should be married, whether you should be alive. A lot of things like that come up.
Well, Dan, you're just a little bit younger than I, but not that much younger. And I do have one child who's now in he's almost 18. But at my age, I would not conceive of having a kid. And why did you decide at this late age to have a child?
I think I realized at a certain point, I'm coming up soon on my 50th birthday, and I realized that what I'd always thought was, oh, well, maybe someday, you know, I just don't have time for a child now, but maybe someday. Well, guess what? Time is running out. And I realized that I did not really want to go through life without the experience of fatherhood. And now was the time.
You should have talked to me about it.
Yes.
I would have been happy to give you a kid. And you would have avoided the nursery stage, and I'd just given you all prepared, all ready to go for you.
Straight into teenage, right?
if having 10 hours of colic is bad, just wait till the kid hits 13.
Yes.
Then your life really changes. No parent should have to live through a kid's adolescence.
Yes, well... I hope I will be alive then, no matter what goes on.
Well, you'll only be about 65.
Right. People kept saying to me, you know, boy, is your life going to change with a child? And they said it with a sort of fiendish glee. And I would have to say they were right. I would have to say that short of my having had a sex change operation and becoming a nun, my life could not possibly have changed any more than it has by having a child. On the days that I take care of him, that is what I can do, and nothing else. He must be watched every second. His current mania is for emptying every drawer in the house, and he is very determined. I mean, he's a very good drawer opener, and he will get that drawer open no matter what, and he will get all the contents out no matter what.
Wait till he finds the disk, your computer disk for your new novel, assuming you have a computer.
Yes.
And destroys that and the backup.
Yes. Yes, I can't wait.
Well, let's go back a little historically now,
right.
and talk about Zach before he was around,
mm-hmm.
because he had to come about in some form or another. And mm-hmm. how and where did this take place?
Well, we
you don't have to be too graphic.
We thought it would be really romantic to conceive our child in a romantic place like the Caribbean. And fortunately, we had been kicked off a flight in Detroit a couple years back, and the airline really was called upon to give us, because it was really, I remember it not being a wonderful situation. We had a confirmed seat, and we were kicked off anyway because they were overbooked. And so what we got out of that was a free flight round trip anywhere in the system, and the furthest we could go into the system was someplace called Grand Cayman Island. And we thought, what a wonderful... We went down there and discovered that the this marvelous little romantic hotel we'd been booked in had gone into a terrible state of neglect, and it was a nightmare. But we still managed to, you know, laugh at it since we couldn't do anything, since we couldn't go home. And there was absolutely nothing to do, so we made love a lot. And oddly enough, did not immediately conceive. The idea you have before you want a child, when you're trying to prevent a child, is, oh boy, you better be really, really careful or you're going to conceive. Well, the instant you decide to conceive, the body doesn't say, okay, guys, let's go into reverse. It takes a while. And so we had to get temperature charts and basal thermometers and a lot of stuff. You don't want to be too graphic. But,
well, eventually you struck pay dirt, and one of
yes.
the, so to speak, one of the things that I noticed, though, during Suzanne's pregnancy, it was a participatory pregnancy, wasn't
yes.
it?
Tell yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, especially when I decided that I was going to write Confessions of a Pregnant Father. So I had been going with her to the obstetrician, but I had been standing behind the little paper skirt, for modesty's sake, that is wrapped around her middle while the obstetrician examines her innards. And on the day that I decided to write Confessions of a Pregnant Father, I decided, well, I'm a good reporter, and I really have to really, you know, find out more. So I stepped around the other side of the paper skirt and looked over his shoulder, and I said, what are you looking at? You know, thinking to learn something. And he got really nervous, and he said, who, me? And later Suzanne, who was biting down on her tongue to keep from laughing, said to me, that must be every obstetrician's nightmare, that some husband someday is going to say, what are you looking at?
Well, you also went to quite a few classes, birthing classes.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, we had Lamaze classes, wherein a group of grown people get to lie on the floor and breathe and hiss rhythmically. And where you get to see a lot of films of women giving birth effortlessly. Maybe the slightest frown crosses their otherwise smiling faces as their babies pop out, you know, perfectly without any pain. That is not how it is, Don. The actual experience of childbirth involves a lot of blood, a lot of screaming. It's not like they showed us in the films. The Lamaze breathing did help. As a matter of fact, I even I felt that Confessions of a Pregnant Father should not only be a sort of journal of the pregnancy and the delivery and so on, but also be instructional. So you will actually find in there how to do Lamaze breathing. You will actually find, you know, all the things, the practical stuff as well as the humorous and the... experiential stuff.
You took some chances. Here you were while your apartment in Manhattan was being rehabilitated, living out in Long Island, and you decided to have the child in Manhattan. Weren't you taking a chance?
Yes.
Commuting?
Yes, it was the height of lunacy. In fact, when she went into labor at 5:30 in the morning one day, all she had to do was say, uh-oh, and I was immediately awake, and I said, okay, let's start timing the contractions, and I was timing them. And at a certain point, I said, okay, I'm going to call the doctor now. And I called the doctor's office. And this woman answered, and I said, hi, this is Dan Greenberg, and my wife has just gone into labor. And the woman said, how far apart are the contractions? And I said, 6 minutes and regular. And she said, has there been, and blah, 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 asking me really intimate physical questions. And at a certain point, I said, is this the nurse or the answering service? She said, oh, well, this is the answering service. And I had a vision that we were going to get to the hospital, and there would be the answering service lady, all scrubbed with the, you know, the surgical gown and gloves on, and so on. But anyway, we got into the car. I said to my wife, "Do I have time to shower?" She said, "No." I said, "Do I have time to go to the bathroom?" She said, "No." I said, do I have time to eat breakfast? She said, no. We got into the car in morning rush hour in a heavy rainstorm, thunderstorm, and drove on the Long Island Expressway to New York, and timing the contractions, and she was already in considerable discomfort. And I was looking around, frankly, for state troopers and hoping that they would know how to deliver babies. See, you know from your Lamaze classes that the first stage of labor lasts 6 hours, and no trip on the Long Island Expressway is going to take 6 hours. That's what you know intellectually. But emotionally, you know that she's going to give birth in 20 minutes in the middle of the Long Island Expressway. But it was exciting, I think.
Now, you were actually in the delivery room, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
What was that like for you?
Well, it was scary. It was fascinating, and it was frightening. It was just like every TV show you've ever seen with doctors, you know, going into the OR, you know, with the high-intensity lights and everybody with masks and gowns. Except it's real life, and there is your wife about to give birth, already in quite a bit of pain. And the doctor, by the way, just having said, oh, I should tell you this, the fetal heartbeat monitor was dropping alarmingly, and nobody would really say anything. You know, we kept saying, is it all right, all right? Yeah, it's all right, all right. And I wanted some reassurance. Going into the delivery room, I turned to the doctor who had been really reassuring throughout the whole pregnancy, almost patronizing in reassuring us. And I said to him as we went into the delivery room, is everything going to be all right? He said, I'm very worried. I was hoping for, yes, Dan, everything's going to be fine. I'm very worried, he said. Now, that isn't really what you want to hear going into a situation like that. But we went in, and and he asked Suzanne to push, and I asked her to push. And it's very interesting what happens when a woman is in the final stages of labor. No longer is the husband the wonderful partner and love mate and so on. He's just an annoyance telling you to push. So she was, I think, quite annoyed with me telling me to push. But she screamed a little bit, and then the baby did come out. And I was so drained of emotion. I was so terrified. I didn't have the expected emotion, which I thought I would cry. And every time, in fact, that we had seen the films of babies being born in Lamaze class, I my eyes would fill up with tears. And I thought, boy, I'm going to really break down when I see my own son. But my eyes were dry. I was just so drained of all emotion. But then, you know, after a while, I realized he was going to be okay and she was going to be okay. And
you even took a photograph of the newborn baby, didn't you?
Yeah, in all humility, I took the most extraordinary photograph seconds after birth with the doctor holding my son in his hands. And that became our birth announcement. And a lot of people, it was a little rough for a lot of people. My family, you know, like my mother, she said, I said, Mom, how'd you like the birth announcement? She said, well, my only worry is, will Zach like it when he grows up? I don't think that was her real worry. I asked my sister how she liked it. She said, it's interesting.
Well, now you finally have another person in the household. That means that your life has changed radically. New responsibilities.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the impact of a visitor who is going to stay with you permanently.
Yes, forever. Well, one thing is that you don't get a lot of sleep, at least in the first year. I'm advising new fathers to sleep during the entire pregnancy so that they can get about 6 to 8 months ahead on their sleep, because they won't be sleeping once the baby's born.
You don't sleep very much when the kid's an adolescent either.
Really?
waiting
up for him.
Yeah, that and everything. I have to warn you about that.
And dope parties, drug parties. It certainly means that my work day is severely curtailed. I do most of my writing now late at night when he's asleep. It means that I have to spend a lot of time feeding him and bathing him and taking him on walks and so on, whether or not I want to. And most of the time it's fun. And
you're supposed to have a wife to do those things.
Well,
she
does it too, and we have a nanny too. But I think we found out with the first nanny, you can burn a nanny out by expecting her to be with the child all the time that she's supposed to be with the child. And you really have to give her breaks, and you have to take over, and you have to, you know. At the point that the nanny starts this low-pitched screaming, that's the signal to take over for her.
Nanny burnout. I never heard of that.
Yes.
Well, now, I have to say that Caldor did do a very nice job with the family picture.
Yes, that's not a Caldor photo, but we did get a photo session at Caldor for $8.88 and got some extraordinary photographs. The picture on the back of Confessions of a Pregnant Father was taken by my friend Michael Ulick, who is an extraordinary photographer. But and on the front, it's very hard to show this on radio. But
go ahead, show it anyway.
Okay, well,
hold it up to the mic.
But on the front of Confessions of a Pregnant Father is me holding Zach, and I'm sort of slumped forward, apparently asleep, and he's more or less putting his fingers up my nose. And that is a typical kind of scene that you would see in our house. I having totally exhausted myself carrying him around or pushing him around on one of his many vehicles, which are all parent-propelled, just sort of dropping with exhaustion, and he's, of course, rearing to go.
How do you think Zach is going to react in the distant future when he's grown up and he opens this book and he reads about his conception, his inception, and all of the other...
I think he'll be intrigued.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
But actually, couldn't Zach say, my private life is being sent out to everybody? They can read it, all my descriptions of my my sexual organs, my circumcision, and all of that.
That's true.
Nobody's business.
All that. Yeah, yeah. Well, he should be glad I don't have photographs of that.
You might.
I've actually written in this book things that are far more personal about myself and my own reactions to the whole process, then I've invaded my own privacy, shall we say, a lot more in Confessions of a Pregnant Father than I have my son's. So I think we're okay on that. And then guess what, Don? He can write his own book about me.
That could be devastating. He'd get even with you.
Yes.
Well, it was a fun read, an interesting story, familiar in many respects because... a lot of fathers like myself go through much the same thing, but not to the degree that you did. I mean, I was not an involved father, potential father, during my wife's pregnancy.
Yeah, you were sort of sleeping through it? Or?
Yeah, I took a back seat. You know, I try to keep a very low profile.
Yeah.
You know, when I took my wife to Mount Sinai Hospital where she had her baby, I realized that I had to get to the bank very fast before it was... closed because the weekend was coming and I wouldn't have any money, you know.
Yeah.
So I left her, and she didn't like that for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, she thought for some reason I should be there
holding
her hand, but you know, there you have to survive. I mean,
yes.
I had no food in the house, and there was a long weekend coming, and what was I going to do? You have to go to the bank.
That's
you know,
true.
It's a matter of self-survival.
Oh, you go to the bank a lot when you have a child. I think that Confessions of a Pregnant Father is the kind of book that will really be not only entertaining, but very useful to people contemplating having a baby or expecting a baby, and then mainly entertaining for people who, like yourself, have gone through the experience, maybe some time back, maybe, you know, having the benefit of the distance to be able to really laugh at it.
And you will never do it again.
And you'll never do it again.
Well, Dan Greenberg, thank you. For coming in and talking to me. I appreciated it, and I hope that Good Morning Mary Sunshine does quite well for you.
Oh,
that's the other book, isn't it? Dan Greenberg, thanks a lot.
Thank you.